Support for this podcast is made possible in part by our members. Become a member of WNTI by visiting our ePledge page at WNTI.org.
Time for Value This with Ryan and Leon. Appraisal experts Ryan Kathanis and Leon Kastner are here to help you make sense of everything but the kitchen sink. Call in now with your really cool stuff at 877-41-VALUE. Now, here's the experts.
And here we are again, Value This with Ryan and Leon. I'm Leon.
Brian, and we're here again, as in we've let us come back. They let us come back, which is really delightful. Hey, quick thanks to the K-Jazz Radio Network for their lovely award, acknowledging Leon Kastner and Brian Kathanis. A grateful public recognizes your years of service to community radio listeners across the United States, the state of Arizona.
Really?
They got like a lot of stations in Arizona.
Wow.
They're cornering the market on Arizona radio.
How about that?
So thank you, Tom, and the gang over there at KJazz.
Really, where's my name?
We'll add it. Yeah. Give me that magic marker.
We're going to give you free lunch today, John.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Give me that magic marker. Yes, John, because it wouldn't be a show without our engineer and our post-production supervisor and all-around nice guy sidekick. Right. Is that right?
That gave him a plug, didn't it?
It is. That's good. That's right.
So here we are, the show about antiques and collectibles and stuff that you might have.
Yep.
And all you got to do is give us a call, 877-41-VALUE, V-A-L-U-E, and we'll chat with you and see what you've got, right?
I think that sounds great. It's a good idea.
Can we go right to the phones this morning?
Well, should we give him John's email? John, I'm looking for a job, delray.com.
No, I'm looking for lunch.
Looking for lunch. Okay, good deal. It all works out. All right, let's go to the phones. You're right.
Okay, hi, you're on Value This with Brian and Leon. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Heather.
Heather, where are you calling from?
Pennsylvania.
Well, can you tell us where in Pennsylvania? We're not going to send anybody out there.
Located kind of near Reading.
Okay. All right, that's good. That sounds out like by you, Leon. You guys could probably be neighbors.
Could be. I'm about an hour south of Reading. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know you were there. I don't know where you are.
Yeah. You don't know. I'm not in Reading, Brian.
Yes,
no.
Leon broadcast from an undisclosed location, so the feds don't catch up to him, too. Heather, what's the name of the town? Can you say that, or are you afraid that we're going to find you?
Oh, no, that's okay. I live in Auburn.
Auburn.
Oh, that's a nice town.
That sounds like a nice town.
There's an Auburn, New York.
There is.
That's up near, Syracuse, I think.
Oh, is that? Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. And are you a university named Auburn?
Yes, there is.
There is. Good.
It's down in Alabama. Right?
Yeah, there you go.
That's so Auburn, Pennsylvania. Well, that sounds pretty
nice. Is it famous for anything, Heather?
Well, the county I live in is famous for making Yingling beer.
Oh, right. Now we're talking. Yes. Okay, great. All right, Leon's paying attention now.
Okay.
Good deal. Yeah. All right.
That changes things.
That's good. That's
so Johnny's eyes lit up, too.
There you go. Okay. All right, so in that case, we're not calling about beer, though, are we, Heather?
No.
So what do you have?
Not today.
What do you have, Heather?
I have a Berkey and Gay dining room set. A table that extends with inserts, and it has six chairs, and then I guess it's kind of like a little buffet.
Okay, buffet or server, a small one, right? Do you have a large?
Yeah,
do you have a larger one, too?
This one, it's probably about 57 inches long.
Okay, and do you have a sideboard or a hutch that went with this?
No.
So you just have the little server and a table and six chairs?
Yes.
Okay. The chairs upholstered?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Is it a dark wood?
Wait. What is this? 20 questions? This is 20 questions.
That's right.
Is it larger than a bread box?
It's not like a dark cherry, but it's not like a light oak. It's kind of like in the middle.
Okay. So it's like a brown acorn squash. No, it's kind of a darker color, though, right?
And yes, it is.
Now, I'm looking – you just sent us pictures, so I'm looking at the pictures here.
Look at you with the pictures.
Okay. There we go. And when I said dark color, this looks like it's what we would call a walnut veneer.
Okay.
Now, which means – and from the pictures, what it looks like is something from the 1920s or 1930s. I don't know how your history goes back. What, you know, was it in the family, or did you buy it at a house sale or an auction, or how you got it? But if you trace it back, I'm pretty sure this is probably late 1920s.
Okay.
Because of style. Now, you mentioned it was Berkey and Gay.
Yes.
The Berkey and Gay company actually started very early on, 1866, right after the Civil War, and it started in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I know that sounds weird, Grand Rapids, Michigan, but Grand Rapids, Michigan became the furniture center of the United States in the late 19th century. And Berkey and Gay was one of the biggest furniture makers of that city. They opened a showroom in New York about 10 years later. They displayed at the Philadelphia Exposition in 1876. They won a couple of awards. And they've been well known, you know, it's a well-established, good name company. However, they went bankrupt around 1931. And then they opened back up in the late 1930s, only for a short period of time, maybe 7 or 8 years. And then that was it. They were bought out by somebody else, and Berkey and Gay no longer existed. The name is a good name. However, they're really known for making mass-produced furniture, and they sold wholesale a lot. And so people like Sears and Roebuck, Montgomery Ward, a lot of those big catalog companies would sell these sets to people, and then they would ship them around the country on the railroad. And that's what they're known for. They have this massive look about them. They looked like they're really good quality, but the key was that they were able to make these very thin veneers, and so it looks good on the surface, but it's not quite as good as you would think. It's not solid wood.
Oh, okay.
So even though it might look like it is, if you look on your pieces and if there's an edge somewhere, often that an edge of a drawer or the side, you often see a little piece might come off, a little chip, and that's where the veneer has come off. Brian, you know anything about Berkey and Gay?
I know
very little, right?
Right.
That's
very
what
little.
I figured.
I know they're happy. They're just a happy company, and
right.
Everything's
it's,
great. So. So I'm just paying attention.
Okay,
I'm learning.
Listening.
I'm taking notes.
Okay.
Heather, I'm getting
okay.
smarter like you are.
Okay.
Because Leon's already
okay,
smart.
Okay, sounds good.
Now, I would say 30 years ago, this was almost impossible to sell, this stuff. It was too dark. It was kind of obsolete, out of date. Nobody wanted it.
Like us.
Yes. And then it came in again.
like us. Look at that.
And now what's happened is that the demand has kind of moved on. Everybody wants mid-20th century, like 1950s and 1960s.
Hmm.
And you're left with stuff from 1920s and 1930s. And so it's kind of bitten the dust again.
Oh, you missed the window of opportunity, Heather. But it'll come around again sometime.
However, you know, I went online and I saw a set similar to yours. They were asking like $3,000. Of course, it's in California, right? You can.
Oh, right.
That's
you can ask whatever you want in California.
That's right.
You're not going to get it.
And it was in a retail shop, and they were asking that. However, they wanted offers.
Yeah.
And
take $500.
That's right. And then, so then I went to like completed sales on one of the auction sites. And I found three similar sets to yours.
You did a lot of work on this.
I did.
Look at you.
Well, she sent pictures yesterday, so I was able to do some work.
Good
okay?
for you. Excellent.
I found three sets. One sold for $350, one $650, and one $1,500. Two of them were 10-piece sets, and one was a 12-piece set, which means they had the sideboard, they had the hutch, the server, table, and they might have had 8 chairs. So you've got a condensed version of that. The end result is you're probably dealing with a set that's worth in the hundreds of dollars, not in the thousands of dollars.
Mm.
And technically it's not an antique, but it's, you know, it's on the verge, you know, another if we use 100 years. So it's on the verge, but it kind of depends if somebody likes it and it's in really good condition. And that's why you have an asking price.
It's definitely in beautiful condition. You know, I just was curious of what information I could find about it, you know, and if it had a value number, so that way I know what I'm going to do with it in my life.
So what are you going to do with it?
Are you saving?
Got to think about it.
Well, for now, I will keep it and hope that my children don't destroy it. And
there you go.
You know, maybe sometime in the future, and it'll be maybe something that'll be worth getting out there and
putting
towards my kids' college fund.
Okay. That's a good piece of advice. Here are two good things. One is it's probably made better than most of the furniture you would buy today, particularly if the furniture you buy today comes in boxes.
Right.
And kits.
You got to assemble it yourself.
Okay.
Right. Yep.
So it's better quality than that. But number two, I want to warn you, there will be a temptation to paint this,
ooh,
to paint it particularly white. And
okay,
because
no.
but they're doing this with a lot of stuff, and they're selling it as what, shabby chic or something? Shabby chic or whatever.
Shabby chic.
And they
shabby
just slap
chicks are people we dated in our early days. Shabby chic is something entirely different.
But they slap a coat of white paint on it, and everybody, and they say, "Wow, it's really old," and they could even distress it a little bit. Don't do that, because then to get the paint off of it to get back to where you are now, that's not a good idea. I would leave it the way you have it now, use it, and let's hope in 10 or 15 years it jumps up.
And if not, you got 10 or 15 years. Yeah. And yeah, if not, you got 10 or 15 years of use out of a good piece of furniture.
Right. And
you're still ahead of the game.
That's
and
right.
Time my oldest one will be ready to start going to college.
There
so.
You go. And college will be $8 million a
yes,
semester.
Right. Yes.
Oh, you're not kidding.
So I hope that helps, okay?
Yeah, it definitely did. It gave me some insight on it. I appreciate it.
Good, Heather. Well, we appreciate you calling. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you. Have
okay.
a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was good advice, Leon. You always give good advice.
Well, it just came to me that usually – now, if this stuff is in – a lot of people have this stuff.
Yeah.
1920s, 1930s, yep. Dark wood, a lot of pieces.
Yep.
If it's in really nice condition, don't paint it over.
Exactly.
Okay? Use
sure.
it later. If it is starting to chip and flake and all that stuff, you almost – it's not worth refinishing. So
yeah.
throw a coat of paint on it.
Sure, can't
use
hurt.
It that way.
When you say – you're talking about the veneer starting to come
off?
Yeah,
the veneer starting to come off.
And
the
veneer come off if it's too moist, too damp. And also if it's too dry, probably more if it's too dry, and the old glue, with the old hide glue
yeah.
that glued the veneer to the base wood starts to get brittle and not hold anymore.
Actually, this company was known for developing a veneer called a 1/40th.
Really?
And
it was 1/40th of an inch?
Well, I don't know if it was 1/40th of an inch, but it was known as 1/40th. It's kind of like not quite the depth of a penny. I mean,
oh,
it's
really?
Not 1/40th.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's pretty significant.
Uh-huh.
But again, once it starts coming off.
Yeah, then the air gets underneath it. It oxidizes and you have
trouble.
There's
not much you can do other than then strip the whole thing down.
Right,
and then
just paint the base
whatever.
Wood. Yeah, good.
So,
that's good to know. All right.
So that's what we call Grand Rapids Furniture.
Because come out of
all
that part
these
of the
furnitures
country?
That came out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And why Grand Rapids, site. Michigan, Leon?
It was because, actually, I think it was because it was the center of the country in terms of transportation.
Okay, right.
Is that they could ship this stuff all over the United States through rail.
Yep.
And through the truck. The trucks were just starting.
And was the raw materials for it available up there,
well,
too? Was
yes,
a lot of the wood come
yeah.
from there? Did they ship the wood in?
Yeah, it's a lot of wood from up in there,
all
yeah.
Right. It's like when Hershey just kind of went, X number of miles from a big city. So did Johnson & Johnson when they set their plants up. And they would just look for close to city, but where they could have access to the raw materials they need. And for Hershey, it was milk.
Right.
So
right.
they went
so
out to the out to dairy country and, right. and got all the local dairies to.
Well, in furniture, I mean, Grand Rapids was the center of furniture until the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it slipped. They all these companies went out of business. Like
so they
Burke
went
and Gay.
So went south.
They went south.
To North
they
Carolina.
They south to North Carolina
yeah.
because a lot of our furniture was made of pine then.
Yes.
See? Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of follow the development of our styles and designs of furniture in terms of what section of the country was.
So when we learned about that in fifth grade, now we understand why,
yeah.
you know, kind of what countries, what
did you learn anything
produced?
In fifth grade? I don't remember learning anything in fifth grade. I'm sure I did.
I'm sure you did. No offense to Leon's fifth grade teacher,
no.
the poor woman who had to put up with him, and he still didn't learn anything.
For 3 years, yes.
Hey, when we come
actually,
back.
Actually, I had my fifth grade teacher, she was my kindergarten teacher too.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow, she came back because she loved you so much?
It must be, yes.
Must be. There you go. Well, if you love Leon so much, come on back after the break.
Uh-oh, there goes our listenership.
877-41-VALUE. Don't go away.
You're listening to Value This with Brian and Leon. Call toll-free 877-41-VALUE and talk about what's in your attic or your basement. Back with more right after this. Call toll-free 877-41-VALUE if you want to talk about the fascinating world of antiques and collectibles. It's Value This with Brian and Leon.
Support for Value This comes from your local public radio station and from Collector Pro Software Antiques Edition. Software and services to the art and antique community since 1992. Track, sort, archive, and manage your prized collections with Collector Pro. Learn more at collectorpro.com.
We're back.
We
didn't go anywhere. We just sat here.
That's right. Let the underwriting spots run, which is all fine. Hope you're all doing well out there and you're ready to call us with some questions or comments or to make fun of us. And you can do that on Facebook, too. People have been making fun of us on Facebook a lot.
Really?
Yeah. So if you go to Value This...
That's why I don't read it much.
That's probably a good idea. That's it. Good. We actually posted the hot dog lady up there.
Hot dog
month is coming up.
Oh, and, that's right. We talk about hot dogs.
Yeah,
yes.
So we talked about hot dogs, and we put the hot dog lady up, the Oscar Mayer Wiener lady, apparently, and she's up on the website there, too. So you can actually... We have some people that will be calling today. We actually call out from time to time. Mm-hmm. We call you. So if you put something on Facebook with a picture and you have a question, we'll call you. Our producers will, because we have those people to do that for us.
That's right.
We're too important to do that, too. All right. We're both sleeping in a doghouse tonight since one of our wives is a producer. But it works out okay, I guess.
My wife's a producer, too. We had 7 kids.
Very good.
That's P.O. Box.
That's right. That's very good. Okay. Well, we have a spare room, Leon, now that the boys are out of college. So you can come up and hang out with us till the nuclear fallout settles over your house.
How many times have you guys gotten in trouble with stuff you said on the show?
Every single week.
That's right. But we love our wives. That's good.
You guys must have like 25 lives or something.
Yeah, apparently.
25 wives? No, 25
lives.
Right.
25
lives.
Lives. There you go. That's good. 25 wives wouldn't be a problem. Next.
We better go to the phone.
Okay. That's good. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Monica. We're happy you're with us.
Hi, you're on Value This with Brian and Leon. Who's this?
This is Warren from New Jersey.
Oh, thank God it wasn't Nancy or Monica.
There you go. Whereabouts in New Jersey, Warren, are you?
Lake Atacon.
Oh, and how's the lake doing these days?
Very good, thank you.
Now that's a little bit of trivia, isn't it? What is the biggest lake in New Jersey?
Oh, should we ask Warren?
Yes,
maybe
Warren.
He'll get it.
Warren, what's the biggest
lake? Lake Atacon?
Excellent, right. Look at you. Ding, 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 ding.
Now, why is it the biggest? No, it's not really the – I mean, it has more shoreline, right? This is not a lake that is like you can't see the other side.
Oh, I don't know. Well, ask Warren.
Warren, right?
It's not huge.
And has all these little inlets all around, and I think it's the actual perimeter of the lake just goes on forever because it's got all these inlets
in
and out.
And things.
Oh,
I see.
But you can see. I mean, you can always see across the lake.
Yes.
This isn't like a great lake, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
That's
great. But it is a nice lake to be on, nice lake to sail on, right?
Yep.
Absolutely, yep.
And I understand on the 4th of July, you can actually walk from one side of the lake to the other and never touch water because that's how many boats are on Lake Atacon during the 4th of July fireworks.
That's true.
I thought it was because of the debris and ashes and beer cans in
right,
the lake.
That's right. There you go. Well, actually, Bertram's Island was there. Did you ever go to Bertram's Island, Warren?
Absolutely. A very good place.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Me too.
It's gone.
It is gone.
So, and Warren,
Tunnel of Love.
Somebody apparently there was a fire that burned a lot of it down, and we had a caller years ago, Warren, that said, I think my brother started the fire. I said, how do you know that? What's that?
Warren says, he couldn't have. He did.
No, it wasn't him. I said, how did you know? She goes, he came back from after the night that it burned, and he looked really guilty. So, we don't know. So how can we help you today, Warren?
I have a courier and eyes lithograph that my grandmother had given to me years ago, and I was just wondering, you know, what kind of value there is in there.
Okay. Now, a couple things we need to know. What's the title? What's the size? And what does it say on it in tiny lines underneath the title?
Okay. The title is American Express Train. The size of the print is like 17.5 by 27.5, roughly.
Okay.
And there, in the left-hand side, there is an F. Palmer or something, Delaware, which I believe must have been the artist or something.
Okay.
And there's also an Act of Congress.
Right. And it should have a date there, right? So like 1864? Entered by an Act of Congress, 1864?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And then it says Courier Knives on the right.
New York, Courier and Ives, 152 Nassau Street.
Yep.
There
okay.
you go.
Now,
excellent description, by the way.
Everything you've told me is pretty good. Now, the crucial question, and by the way, Courier and Ives print, Courier was one guy and Ives was another, and they worked separately, and then they were printmakers. Then they decided to join forces, and they started a new company called Courier and Ives in New York City, and they made lithographs, which means they made a picture on a plate And then they reproduced the same one over and over and over again, but it was in black and white. And what they would do then, it was they would take it and they'd take it into their factory, and they had these long tables, and people had little watercolors in there. And it was usually women and children, and they would watercolor the scene. And they would do one after the other after the other. And so it was kind of mass produced, but there's this hand process of coloring it. And so through the years, these have become collectible because they were good American scenes. They're very popular. But it is also one of the most reproduced pieces of artwork that there is. All the insurance companies, anybody that had calendars, like in the 20th century, they would reproduce scenes of Courier Knives for each month. And so 95% of the time when you see a Courier Knives, it's probably a reproduction, which is not worth much of anything. Reproduction means that it's been reproduced on a photomechanical machine, and when you get real close, you can see a dot structure. So here's the crucial thing, Warren. You got to get a magnifying glass, get real close to it, and see whether you can see a dot structure or whether you see the paint kind of flowing like watercolor on paper. That's going to tell us whether you've got an original or whether you don't. And everything you've told us is good. It doesn't say reproduction. It doesn't say after. It has all the right words on it, but we want to make sure that it is what it's supposed to be. And here's the reason we want to know that. Because Courier Knives made over 7,500 different scenes. They have different prints, 7,500 different prints. They're in three sizes, small, medium, and large. And there are some that are much more valuable than others. Yours, the American Express train, and this has nothing to do with the credit card company, by the way, American Express train is one of the top 15 Courier Knives that exist, which means that it could potentially have some value.
But it's also one of the most commonly
reproduced.
Yes.
So that's why I'm saying you got to look at that, you know, get a magnifying glass. Now, how long ago did your mom give it to you?
My grandmother got it in the early 50s, and I got it like maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Has it always been framed, or have you ever reframed it?
It's always been framed.
Okay. Here's the key. If the magnifying glass doesn't work, because the glass on top of the print, you may have to take it out of the print. And when you take it out, you're going to be able to run your hand very lightly across the top, and you could feel whether it's photomechanical, which is kind of a glossy, you know, you're not going to feel any variations. But if it's watercolor and it's original, you're going to feel a little bit, and you can hold it up to the light, and you could probably see the age of the paper. And that is going now. And here's the reason why you do this. If this is a photomechanical reprint, it's even in a nice frame, you're not talking more than $50.
Right.
If this is a good one, an original, I'm just going to give you a couple prices that I found lately. They seem to cluster around $3,000. Okay, $2,900, $3,200, $2,200, although a couple have brought serious more than that. I mean, we're talking like $20,000 and $30,000. And so that's why you got to make sure on this, because you have a potentially good piece here. I just want to give you some tidbits, because a lot of people have Courier Knives. So if you're listening and you think you have a Courier Knives, listen up. The top 10 or 15, I'm going to give you some titles for the top 10 Courier Knives. Winner in the Country, Star of the Road, Prairie Fires of the Great West, Midnight Race on the Mississippi, Wild Turkey Shoot, Through to the Pacific, A Home on the Mississippi, The Whale Fishing Laying On, Bass Fishing, The Great West. Now, the reason I give you those titles, the 10 of them, is because it kind of gives you an indication of the topics that are really favorites among collectors. They like anything to do with the American country, the American West. They like travel. They like locomotives. They like steamships, fishing scenes. That's all really good. And yours is of a locomotive, right? Now, you have this locomotive, and probably smoke is billowing out of the top, right? to the right of the locomotive, what can you, what, tell me what you see on the right of that locomotive in the background?
It's like a paddle boat, a steam paddle boat.
Okay, so there's a kind of like a river or a body of water on the right side, right?
Correct, correct.
Okay, now there's a couple of versions of this one. You have the version that has the Hudson River in the background.
Okay.
With that paddle boat. That's a good thing. Okay, another version has like a rock wall on the right side. So you've got an, again, it's a good indication. You this could be a good one. If you have a Currier Knives and it's a religious subject, it's a portrait of a girl. It could be a portrait of a president, could be a portrait of a woman. If it's something like that, that's at the bottom of the list. But the things that are really good, like baseball, if you can find a Currier Knives baseball original one, that's a top. You know, that's one of the top 15. But again, Mississippi, fires, tragedies, steam locomotives, all that's really, really good. Currier Knives actually made art available for the average American. And that's what was so good about it, is that, you know, there were artists, Hudson Valley School artists, that were painting these wonderful scenes of like the Hudson River and the mountains around there. And then Currier Knives came along, and of course you couldn't afford those, but Currier Knives came along and said, listen, you like that? I'll make you a lithograph. And so he would sell thousands of the lithographs, and people could afford them. They ranged from a couple of pennies up to, for the larger ones, maybe a dollar at most. So people could buy this, they could get a framed, hang it in their house, and they had a piece of artwork. That's why the name Currier Knives is kind of like magical in American artwork. So all the indications point to you have something really decent, but you got to make that last step and you know, find out whether it is or it isn't. So it might be, this might warrant taking it out of that frame, you know, and then seeing if there's anything else on it.
Or find someone that can identify it to, because there are reproductions from the 40s that came out that were done very similar. They used a collotype printing, which is very similar to the original stone lithograph. And the other concern is, someone would buy up those old stone the stones that they were actually done on, and in right after early 1900s, they ended up putting a bunch of those out. They're mostly the maritime prints, but there's problems with it, but certainly worth looking at closer. Leon says,
right, you know? Now these have gone down in value in the last couple of years, as with a lot of antiques, but they're still pretty good. And there are places that specialize in Currier Knives prints. There's a print shop in Philadelphia and one in New York that they know everything there's to know about Currier Knives prints. So you might be able to take it to one of those places. They can look at it right away. They'll know the exact size of the paper, because even if it's off a quarter of an inch, they'll know whether it's trimmed or not. They'll know that, and they'll know by looking at it. And the reason there's price variations on these, because you think they're all the same, why do we have price variations? Because over the years, the coloring has faded. And so some were kept in dark rooms, kept in very good condition, and they're like new. I mean, they're just really brilliant, whereas others have faded out. The paper might starting to rust or fox. There might be water stains on it. So all of those factors, condition factors, kind of tell you whether or not you've got a $2,000 one or a $20,000 one.
There you go.
So
okay.
Now
okay,
you know.
Warren? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks,
good luck.
Warren.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Very tricky. Very, very tricky.
Sorry, subject. I ran on and on. No, but I finally found something I know something about.
Very tricky.
Man, two callers in a row I know something about.
That's great. Well, what we've done is our producers have kind of cut out all the other calls that you don't know anything about. So we sound really smart this week. We're going to save those for next week.
So we got to feed Johnny twice this week.
There
right?
you go. Absolutely.
Lunch
yep,
and
absolutely.
Dinner.
Absolutely. There you go. Good deal. Yep. Tricky stuff.
What do we got, John?
What is going on?
Wow.
It's the state trivia. I like this. So what state are we talking about today, Leon?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Actually, a state that I lived in for a very short period of time.
Yeah?
North Carolina.
That wasn't that short. You were down there for a while.
I was down there for
until none of your kids decide to come see you, and you figure if you want to see the kids, you had to move closer to them.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. And North Carolina's motto is first in freedom.
Oh, really?
And
I thought it was first in flight.
And First and Flight 2.
Seriously?
Yeah.
They couldn't make up their mind?
That's right. They originally said First and Freedom and then First and Flight.
But, got it.
And the reason they were First and Freedom.
Yes.
Because they actually declared independence from England in 1775.
What is wrong with those people?
A year before.
Really?
The United
all
States
alone?
Did, yes, all
Man,
alone.
Man, they had big ones, huh? That was crazy.
It was called the Mecklenburg Declaration.
Sure, I didn't know that.
They did that all on their own, yes.
Wow. And how'd that work out for them?
They've still been declaring independence all these years,
yeah, that's,
you know,
there you
from
go.
Everybody.
That's right. There's only one law in North Carolina. Don't do nothing dumb. Actually, there's two. They had one. Don't fish with dynamite. That was the second law they put in.
Well, in the community I lived in, they had a third rule.
Yes.
And that was don't put an old sofa on your porch.
Oh, that's it.
And if you had a car, it couldn't be up on
blocks for more than 24 hours.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Okay, there you go. That makes sense.
So
kept the neighborhood nice.
Yes, right. But they were also called First and Flight because you know all about that. You're a big aviation guy.
I would think that we posted something on our Facebook page, right. Value This Facebook page, about the Wright brothers.
Right.
Who flew down there.
Kitty Hawk down at the Outer Banks.
Yep.
So they are First in Flight. And I think their license plate today has First in Flight on it.
Yes. That I do remember. I didn't remember the First in Freedom.
But in terms of antiques.
Yes.
The reason North Carolina's kind of prominent there is because they also are home to the largest house in America, the largest privately owned house in America.
A big house?
A big house.
Really? I've been there.
Yeah, really? Me too.
Yeah.
Nice place.
Yep.
It's called the Biltmore House in Asheville, North Carolina. Beautiful, beautiful residence there. It was made to look like the French Chateau.
Yeah.
And filled with gorgeous antiques, and you can take tours there. They have a winery. Great place to visit. So it's the North Carolina, home of the largest house in America. And across the valley, by the way, and we've stayed there, is that was a Park Grove Inn.
Oh, yeah,
Grove
that's
Park
right.
Inn, yep. Which is a big arts and crafts conference
that's
center.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and one other thing that you might not have known about North Carolina.
What would that be?
Pepsi was invented there in 1898.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Really? What was the guy who invented Pepsi? Remember his name?
George Pepsi.
Was it?
No, I don't remember his name.
It's in our book.
It was in our
book. It's in our book, but I don't remember. Yep.
You must have wrote that section, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I don't remember. I'm going to look it up now.
Okay.
Caleb Bradham.
There you go.
We talked about it because we actually read about him. Yep.
He had a little drugstore there,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And so they invented Pepsi.
There you go.
So our hats off to North Carolina, First in Freedom, First in Flight, First in Houses, and I'm not sure they're First in Soda. Is Pepsi bigger than Coke or Coke bigger than Pepsi?
I think Coke is bigger than Pepsi.
Yes. I'm not sure.
Well, that's good, but
there,
I think
it's
there
great. There we go. There we go.
Good.
So
like
there it is. There's our state trivia for the week, North Carolina.
Really? That's good.
Is that like good?
It. Well done.
Good.
Well done.
Well, stay tuned because we got more callers when we return right after this.
You're listening to Value This with Brian and Leon. Call toll-free 877-41-VALUE and talk about what's in your attic or your basement. Back with more right after this. Call toll-free 877-41-VALUE if you want to talk about the fascinating world of antiques and collectibles. It's Value This with Brian and Leon.
And we're back. Value This with Brian and Leon.
We came back.
We did. We didn't leave.
And so did our listeners. Hey, if you want to reach us through the week, check out our website, valuethisradio.com. You can leave an email there for us, and we will get back to you. Go to Facebook. You go to valuethisfans.com, and you'll find us. And you can leave a message there, or you could always drop us a regular old snail mail. But you got to figure out the address. We're not telling you.
By the way, I went on Facebook. I saw that you you posted a picture somewhere you were at. It was like an obelisk, looked like the Washington Monument.
Oh, yes, you know? Yes, it
and
was,
you said,
yes.
What is this?
Where am I?
Where
we?
Am I?
Yes, right, yep.
And I would say that if you don't live in New Jersey, you have no idea what that was.
Right.
Or where
it
was, right?
Yep, it was the High Point Monument made during the Depression by the Civilian Conservation Corps. FDR put a lot of people to work during that period all over the country. They built giant lodges and wonderful buildings, stone buildings all across the country to keep America working. It was a way to keep people busy and to provide them with wages so they could eat and not just plain old give it away.
So it sits on one of the highest points in New Jersey.
And that's why they call it
High Point. It High Point
Yes, absolutely.
And it's High Point State Park.
Yes. Yep.
There's a lake around it now. And have you ever been to the top of that monument?
I have not. You used to be able to go in.
And I've been there. When I was a kid, I was there, what, three times a year?
Yeah.
And it was always locked.
Yes.
I was never able to go to the top.
I don't know if they ever opened it up.
That's true.
That probably has never been opened up. They just built it. And
so you walk up
shoddy
there
workmanship.
And go, wow, that's really neat.
Yeah. Well, it's like going to the Washington Monument. The first day they opened the Washington Monument after the earthquake repairs, people got stuck in the elevator and they had to walk all the way down. But I think it's fixed. But that was it. Yeah, so if you're looking for interesting things, go to that. Go to the Facebook page and see what's going on.
And now that I recall,
yes,
since I looked at you, also posted something that said that it was a stone house.
Looked like the Flintstone house.
Looked like the Flintstone house.
Yep.
And I looked at that, and I hadn't seen the monument yet.
And you knew where it
was?
And
I knew it was in High Point State Park.
Really?
They had bears there, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
They did. A lot of bears. They had a cage with a couple of bears in it.
Yep.
It wasn't a zoo. It was just alongside the road.
Right, yeah, right.
And you always stop there.
Yep.
There was no signs, no admission, nothing.
Just bears.
Just bears inside these gates in this little stone house.
Yes, exactly.
And
it's been turned into a restroom.
A restroom.
Yes. So it's a
for bears or for people?
No, for people.
For people.
Yes, right.
Does it have a sign?
If it was for the bears, yeah. If it was for the bears, then it would answer that age-old question, yes, a bear does do that in the woods.
Right.
So there you go. And they have the bathroom to prove it. So there you go. So with that.
We better go to the phones.
Hi, you're on Value This with Brian and Leon. Who's this?
Hey, this is Marcus. I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Hey, Marcus, how's life in Houston?
Sunny out the bay.
Probably hot, too, right?
Yeah, it's not infernal right now in hell. It's nice out. It's tropical right now.
But it'll get there.
Yes, you wait.
That's right.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, there you go.
It is Houston, yeah.
Good deal. Well, thanks for calling in. How can we help today?
Yes, I was calling because I was trying to find out about a Roy Jones Jr. T-shirt that I had autographed.
Oh, nice.
I was just trying to find out what the value was of it.
Okay.
Well, tell us.
I've been having it for like...
Go ahead.
3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. So tell us the story. I mean, did you go to a fight and have it signed, or did you see him on the street, or what?
Well, they had a big amateur event out here in Houston, and my son, that's 8 and 9 now, and actually he's a boxer.
Oh, nice.
And his camp was part of the amateur event.
Excellent.
And
cool.
I had met a lot of boxing stars.
Oh, nice.
So you bought a shirt there, or did you bring one from home?
Actually, I took one off my back.
Oh, no kidding. Excellent. There you go. Now we got some real history with it. So Roy Jones Jr. was a professional boxer. He was also a rapper, and I think he did a movie or two, didn't he?
I know he did music, but I'm not for sure about the film.
Yeah, someone had mentioned that to me too, but I don't know much about the acting. But I know he did some music stuff too.
Did he win a championship? Or
yeah, he was a middleweight or super middleweight championship, I believe. Yeah. I thought he was a heavyweight championship, wasn't he?
Right.
Cool. All right. Born in late '60s, still around, which is kind of cool. But so tell us about when people get an autograph, when it's associated with something related to that person, it's usually a little bit better. So did the T-shirt say anything? Did it have his name on it? Was it for something, or was it just a plain old T-shirt?
It was actually just a plain T-shirt. And what happened was I was walking with Floyd Mayweather's father in the hotel downtown.
Oh, nice.
And and we were coming off the elevator, and we had actually just happened to bump into Roy Jones Jr.
That's very cool. Neat. So here's the deal on this.
By the way, did you then say, hey, would you mind autographing my shirt? And did you take it off, or did he sign it with you when you had it on?
Actually, I had took it off.
You took it off?
I asked him if he didn't mind signing. I had two T-shirts on, actually. Someone told me to wear two T-shirts that day.
That's a great idea.
In case you met two famous people.
Yes.
You know? That's it. Good.
So did he sign it with a pen, or what did you have to sign it?
A black marker, a permanent marker.
Black marker.
Excellent. Have you washed it? You haven't washed it then, have you?
No, I haven't even worn it. It's just been hanging in my closet for the longest.
Very good. Okay. Well, it may not be paying college for your younger folks in your family there, but it's a neat piece. So I'm going to give you an idea of what other things of Roy Jones Jr.'s are being offered for. A lot of the sports memorabilia sites are offering things anywhere from probably the best thing or would be something that was actually used in a boxing match or something that was used in one of his concerts. So boxing gloves, I haven't seen anything here of boxing gloves that were actually used in a fight. But boxing gloves signed by him are selling in the $130 range. A robe, oh, here's a robe that he wore, a fighting robe, sold, is being offered for $450. Here's another one for about $475. Signed photos are going for about $50 a piece. Signatures on pieces of paper or on programs are being offered anywhere from $20 to about $60. So my gut is you're probably more in the signature range than you are in the signed photo or signed sports memorabilia range. So, you know, if you were to ask for a retail price on that or you want to insure it and protect it, I'd probably keep it under $100, probably in the $50 range or so.
So 50 to 100 probably.
Yeah, 50 to 100 might be pushing a little bit, you know. But it's a good piece, and, you know, it's probably going to do okay as long as you don't wash it or wear the T-shirt again.
Right.
Well, I think I would sign it.
You would sign it yourself?
Myself, yeah.
My T-shirt and Roy. Okay.
Or I would say, I beat Roy.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
Know? And then
that's
sign
right.
it.
I kicked Roy Jones' butt.
Yes.
And here, and you know, he can write your name on there.
That's
right. This, you know, just to say, kicked my butt, Roy Jones, and I'm afraid of him, and he's a bigger guy than I am. And just write stuff above it. Who knows? You know, I'm kidding. You know. But that'll be fun. That sounds like it's a great piece of memorabilia. It'd be something that your son will remember and you can remember. So take good care of it.
Oh, I sure will.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. You be well.
Thanks,
Marcus. All right.
Marcus.
Thank you. You too.
Stay okay. cool. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Interesting. That's good.
That is cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's a good idea. If you're going to a concert or you're going anywhere else,
wear
two shirts.
T-shirts. That's great. That's right. Unlike at NASCAR where sometimes people go and get and they get signature on parts of their body.
Their body.
Would you sign this for me? You know, what do we do? Yeah. Where would you like the signature? Right here.
You know what they do sometimes?
What do
They'll
they do
actually
sometimes?
Bring pieces of cars.
Yes, I've seen pieces of
cars. I was at
cars.
An event a couple of years ago, and Kyle Petty was there. He's the son of Richard Petty.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And this guy brought the whole rear section of a car, and it was a car that he crashed.
Oh, no kidding.
That Kyle Petty had crashed.
That's great stuff.
He got the piece because somehow got flown off.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he just brought the bumper in, and the guy signed it, and it's like, they'll sign anything. They'll sign tires. They'll sign if the car was involved in like a crash or something in like a famous race, it's actually worth, I think, a little bit more.
Right. And if you go to any NASCAR races, there's always the backfield where all the vendors are, and there are all tires and there are pieces of hoods, like you said, and all those kind of things too.
But it's got to be hard to like, you know that it's the real thing.
Right. That's very true to figure out is that car just a, you know, especially if it's like a shock absorber. You know, who knows where that one came from. But a lot of parts. They're changing out parts a lot. A lot of scrap parts out there, too. Good point, John. Thank you. Big NASCAR fan.
Okay. Yeah.
What?
You know what time it is?
What time is it? Now I know what time it is.
All right. Our question from last week was, what glass company's early success included providing glass for the windows at St. Paul's Cathedral in New York City?
Nice.
Now, what would the answer you think?
My guess was Tiffany.
Right, right.
But it's wrong.
It's wrong, absolutely.
Okay. But that's my guess. I'm being honest here, because that's what we do on Value This with Brian and Leon.
You say stained glass, and you automatically think Tiffany.
Right, because
Tiffany was actually a company from West Virginia.
Get out of town.
Called Blenco.
Who?
Blenco.
B-L-E-N?
B-L-E-N-K-O. Blenco is known for very colorful
glass. I know that name.
Right?
I know that name, yes. Fascinating.
And actually, that company, Blenco, are the people that make the Country Music Awards trophy.
No.
Yep.
Really?
Bet you didn't know that,
I did not know that. That's great.
And,
excellent.
Blenco was in bankruptcy for a while. They just exited last year, so they're still in business.
Good for them.
So the Blenco glasswork, which is usually modern, colorful glass, has a good history. And
nice.
And when you go to St. Paul's Cathedral in New York City, try to find their stained glass window.
Nice.
Okay, now,
excellent. Yes.
Here's our question
We have one for this week?
We have one for this week.
Excellent.
You ever heard of a punch figure? Don't tell me what it is, but you've heard of a punch figure.
A punch figure.
A figure of punch. In other words, it's a figure, and the character is punch.
Oh, yes,
that's
yes,
the
yes,
name
yes.
of the character.
I got it.
Right?
Okay, great. I thought about the drink that we used to spike when we were kids.
No, this is a carved figure,
yes.
And the figure's name is punch.
Got okay? it. You got it.
Now, this figure was used outside of stores in the 19th century. you'd have a store, and then you would push this figure on the outside of the store when you're open during
the
daytime.
Got it. Yep. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Why?
Good question.
Okay. So why was a punch figure used outside of stores in the 19th century?
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. I like that.
So you got to answer our questions and send us a response. Our email is theuglyguys@brianandleon.com.
Good.
And tell us the answer.
All right.
And you may win a free, wonderful laser pen.
Excellent. The LED, it's not a laser, it's an LED.
Well,
but it's close.
Close.
Because a laser you get arrested for now.
That's true.
People
that's
point
true.
Them at each
you
other and they point them at planes.
Right.
Don't do that.
No,
it's
an appraisal pen.
Exactly.
A flashlight pen.
Exactly.
I'm glad you clarified that. I'd be in big trouble, wouldn't I?
That's right. Don't do the laser thing. We don't get ourselves in trouble here.
Okay.
LED pen. Good. All right.
Okay.
Should we go back? We got time to go back to the phones?
One more call, yes.
All right.
Again, our number is 877-41-VALUE.
Good. Now, what we do from time to time, we go on Facebook and get information from people. And Eve had sent some pictures of some things that she had questions about. So we're actually calling her, and we could call you if you leave us a picture and a message on Facebook. Hi, Eve. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Great. Okay. Now, thanks for calling and or thanks for dropping us a post on the Value This website and the Facebook page. So tell us what you have and how we can help so our listeners know about it, because we already know.
Well, we have a set of 12 brandy snifters from the Shipyard Inn at the Disneyland Hotel, which no longer exists. And we were just trying to decide if it was garage sale or if we should try to sell it a little higher.
There you go. Tell us a little about what the glasses look like, because Leon is an expert on defunct hotels.
Oh, jeez.
He's been thrown out of more good hotels in the country than anybody I know.
Well, they have the Shipyard Inn and Disneyland Hotel logos in gold leaf kind of lettering. And then there's nautical markings, I guess ship markings also on the glass. And I've been trying to look up a little bit into it. It's like the load line that you would see on the side of a ship that tells if it's overloaded, how deep it is in the water, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's about all I know about it. It's all nautical themed.
There you go. Now you sent me a picture this morning that says deck line, 300 millimeters. You have like this huge analysis, and this is how the markings show on the glass?
Yes, sir.
And how did you do this? Do you work for like an engineering company or something?
No, I Googled it.
Oh, I see. Okay, cool. All right, great. So these are Disney glasses from Disneyland. Hotel was around in the 60s. Did they take it down in the 80s? Is that what I remember?
What I found on it is that it was replaced in 1999.
99. Okay, great. All right, so we want to know whether these are garage sale items or rarities that are going to be worth gazillions of dollars.
Yeah, I'm doubting that.
Yeah, I think so. There was a guy named David Smith, and he was the archivist for Disney, and he has since retired. But if you wanted to find out if Disney has an interest in them, contact the Disney archivist and find out if they have any interest in them. They might have a million of them. And in that case, they're not interested in them because did you buy these or you think you stole these? I mean, borrow them and just kept going back. And every time you got a brandy, you'd walk out with a glass.
Well, my father got them back in the early 70s. I guess he went to a convention. He was an airline. He was a pilot and a helicopter salesman. And they, I guess, had a Disneyland convention in the early 70s. And he brought home 12 of these.
Nice.
So we have plenty.
So they were probably giveaways, too. So, so my gut is, well, maybe we'll get Leon's read on this, and then I'll share my Disney experience. Go ahead.
Well, I would think that because the word Disney and Disneyland is that it had something to do with a major character, you know, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, you know, something like that. I think that probably would be of more interest than of a building that is no longer there on the grounds. That's just my take on it. I think that's how the public would respond. I think it's interesting, but I don't think it's like, you know, out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with Leon. I'm so sorry, but I would have to agree with Leon on this one, Eve. That I think they're very collectible. They're great family memorabilia, and they're great Disney memorabilia, but I don't think they're worth a whole lot. And I imagine we've done a little digging, and we see them going for $3, $4, $5 a piece. So, you know, you got a nice set there worth $60, $75, but if Disney needs them and they don't they might have a great interest in them and will be willing to pay some good money for them to be able to get them into their archive. All righty?
Okay. All right. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck with it. Thanks so much for dropping us a Facebook post. Talk to you soon.
All All right, bye-bye.
All right, good deal. And you need to know that our studio engineer and post-production supervisor is John. Where are we going for lunch? Del Rey, who keeps us going in the right track. Our executive producers are John I'm the Boss Lewis and Melanie Dawn Bertil. Special thanks to our producers, Nancy Arnott and Marilyn Hankins, and to our Value This Summer intern, Dan, no nickname yet, DeReezy. So we need a nickname for Dan. So you're going to hear Dan over the next couple of shows. Send us a nickname for Dan, and we'll be in good shape. Value This with Brian and Leon is a production of WNTI Public Radio from Centenary College. Support for Value This comes from your local public radio station and from Maine Antique Digest, the marketplace for Americana. More info at maineantiquedigest.com and from Project USE, Urban Suburban Environments, celebrating more than 40 years of providing America's youth with experiential education. Learn more at projectuse.org.
Okay, our quote of the week comes from a famous North Carolina person.
Really? Are they famous? You?
Orville Wright.
Orville?
Orville, because we talked about
who way outlived Wilbur. Right, there okay. You go.
You know
tell
what
us.
You know what his famous words were?
Ah!
I was going to say, how do I stop this thing? No, here's
that
what
was George
said.
Jetson's famous.
That's right.
Yes.
If we all worked on the assumption that what is accepted as true is really true, there would be little hope of advance.
Very
sounds
nice.
Like an aeronautical guy, doesn't
sounds
it?
Sounds like it to me. Like a scientist,
other.
For sure.
How do I stop this thing? And we've stopped this. Value This is Brian Lee, and see you next time. Bye-bye.